in the night. Your heart fills with dread, probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed. You'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinister Who?
Hello and welcome to another edition of Freaky Friday, where we tell your odd but true stories. It is the last Friday in August. We're just trucking through these months so quickly. How?
I don't know, but this has been a rough week.
Yeah.
We gotta acknowledge up top the passing of two icons.
Right. On the same day.
But
holding the news for one so that the other can be celebrated. Of course, we're talking about the patron saint of Appalachia, Dolly Rebecca Parton.
She was one of a kind. My daughter's school is doing a tribute to Dolly tomorrow, and everyone is to wear pink. And there's a whole thing of like, be kind and examples of how she was. And then they are to do one of the things like lift someone up, share a book with someone, do something selfless for a classmate.
And cool, I just put on makeup, so now I'm sobbing.
I know, but I'm like,
oh my God.
It really has been incredible to see the global reach that she had. I mean, like,
oh yeah,
Buckingham Palace, they did a tribute to her. And I mean, here in Dallas, Reunion Tower was lit up.
Yeah,
the Empire State Building was lit up. Like, she had such a positive impact on so many people's lives, and so sad that she has left this realm.
Oh yeah. And she they gave her a above the fold photograph obituary in the New York Times, which is usually reserved for presidents, heads of state. And I think that's what she was to a lot of. I mean, she was a spokesperson for folks who, like her, came from nothing, you know, dirt poor. She talked about how her father could not read, and that was such an impetus for her for starting her library that's now, I think, sent over 300 million books, and it's still going to keep going. They said the website crashed because everyone tried to donate when she passed away. But that's the type of person that when you want to be a person like that, that when you leave this world, the only things that I've seen people say bad have been dipshit contrarians that are like, well, I mean, I don't think she was perfect because she had money. I'm like, she created literally her entire theme park to employ people. She drug an entire area out of what otherwise probably would have been very impoverished. You know, factories were leaving. You're not seeing manufacturing. So to have something that you're paying almost double minimum wage, you're hiring people with all types of abilities, all ages, and making sure that they're cared for. They have health insurance, they have education reimbursement, things like that. I always try to, whenever I ask the universe for things, you know, where you say, I'm grateful for this, and could you please just give me the success? And I'm always like, if you give me the resources, I will Dolly Parton it. Like, I swear, you know what that means, right?
Yeah.
God, universe, like, and
she
could
have been a billionaire, and she chose not to be.
Easily.
And she also funded the COVID vaccine.
Yeah.
So Moderna. Things like that, that maybe people weren't even aware of, but these things that happen that benefit humanity. And then, of course, we also lost one of my favorites, Tim Curry.
Ugh, I can't believe it either.
Such a day.
And so many of his colleagues and friends were posting about him. And I saw Annie Potts, who she's from Ghostbusters. You remember her. She's like, we got one, and a lot of other stuff. But they were very close. They had done some films together. And she's like, my neighbor, my boy's uncle, like, taught me about, like, I taught him fishing. Just, it's always beautiful when you hear the celebrities that meant so much to us also were loved by those that were closest to him and were cherished. And Dolly was obviously cherished. You know, Miley Cyrus said something, but Tim Curry as well. I think he was like such a salve to so many people.
Oh yeah. I mean, I was just watching a reel of some of his best roles, and I was like, so many of these are literally my favorite movies. I mean, I talk about Clue all the time. One of my all-time favorites, Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Man.
He's just so versatile and gave everything to every role he ever had, as did Dolly on stage. I saw, I don't know the exact year, but it had to have been in the 70s. But her being walked up to the stage where Kenny Rogers is already singing, and then she walks up singing, and she's just, she commands an entire crowd, and she was tiny, itty bitty. Mm-hmm. And just, I mean, as soon as like she starts singing, you see Kenny Rogers' face just light up. She not only had that effect on us, but like you said, like colleagues, fellow performers. And when you can make it in an industry like that and come out on the other side with really nothing bad to say about you, mm-hmm. and Tim Curry, it's like, we made the right people famous. You deserve to be famous because you did good with it.
Right. It was the type of people that they were in reality who you hope they would be. Cause you're, mm-hmm. you know, as a fan, you're like, she's so funny and cute on stage. I hope she's really like that. People said, oh, if you got in a Dolly Parton meet and greet line, she'd stay 3-4 hours. She would not mm-hmm. leave. And that V from Under the Desk News worked there as a Dollywood singer many, many years ago. And they said she would have the cast, you know, she would come and perform with the cast at the Christmas show, and wow. that they would do a meet and greet for the people who were there. And that the whole time Dolly's energy was up, and that she would say to her cast, you know, I know you might be feeling tired, but you just got to get the energy from these folks because they are giving you the energy that you need to do your job. And tomorrow when you do your job, this is the energy you're going to use. So she had this sort of reciprocity with the audience too. And the same with Tim Curry. I feel like when he would do a role, he was pouring himself into the role for the delight of the role, that he delighted in the role, and he wanted mm-hmm. us to delight. And he wanted the person in the scene with him, not I'm the ham going to take this. It was like, you're going to love this and yeah. get in and do that. And both of them, I think that one thing we can all do, and I love Ella's school, that's awesome. But that generosity and that energetic reciprocity that they both had, that, you know, just because they're gone, I think it is a reminder of like, man, they're not here, but it's like with Mr. Rogers, you know, you want to keep mm-hmm. going. And then we have the Miss Rachels, right, that take the mantle. So we'll be looking to see who takes their mantles. But for now, they're in the Hall of Fame in my heart.
They are. They're in the Hall of Fame. People say they come in threes, and Hayden Panettiere could be included in that three as well.
Most
so.
Definitely.
Wherever the three of them are, I hope they're all enjoying their favorite beverage together mm-hmm. and rehashing their favorite memories and roles, and just realizing and feeling how the impact they made on everyone here.
Yeah, when you leave like that and the outpouring is overwhelmingly, if not unanimously, love, I don't know where you end up afterwards, but I imagine you'll be able to feel that.
Yeah. I hope so. Well, yeah, wherever Dolly and Tim Curry ended up is also where I want to
take
end up.
Me,
so, wherever please. That is, I don't know, but I would like to go there.
Exactly. I want to go to there. I don't know what it's called, but that take me there. If I show up and they're in the room, or like Johnny Cash or something, I'm like, all right, I did it. All right. I did it
okay.
right. I did it right. All I did
right.
it right.
Yeah. I will say, you mentioned presidential earlier because mm-hmm. they're usually the ones to get above the fold. I believe the president of our country said he's lowering the flags all week in honor of her. So, you know, sometimes he agrees with us.
You do something right. I saw the Ron Swanson meme from when Lil Sebastian died, and he's like, half mast is too high, you bastards. And I'm like, that's how I feel. I'm like, take them all the way down.
Yeah, remove them. Just take them off.
Replace them with a pink version of the flag.
Right.
With her face on it.
Just a pink, sparkly, bedazzled version. Well, may we all carry their legacies with us and act the way that they would.
Yeah, WWDPD, right? What would Dolly mm-hmm. Parton do? It's a mm-hmm. good question.
Well, in the meantime, until we know the answer to that question, we got some stories for you.
So you all have outdone yourselves. Thank you so much for everybody that wrote in your stories. And don't forget, this inspires you, because some of these are inspired by past Freaky Fridays, so you never know what might spark a memory.
Absolutely. Well, I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get freaky. Content warning, this story discusses domestic violence and sexual assault. This first one is from Annette and is called "The Time I Almost Got Kidnapped Right Outside of My Grandparents' House." Hi, Heather and Christy. I'm a longtime listener and recent Patreon subscriber after many years of not taking the plunge, but I'm so happy I did, and I get to be a part of this amazing community of the best listeners on the internet. I love y'all so much, and y'all have helped me through so many dark times in my life. I started listening after COVID while I was in an abusive relationship, and you ladies were truly my light in a very dark time. I thought this man was eventually going to kill me, as he had choked me and slammed me up against the wall before, and would often verbally abuse me and back me into corners and take advantage of me sexually as well. He also described to me in detail how he would like to kill me and watch the life leave my eyes. Since we were literally on lockdown, I was trapped with him in the small town I grew up in. I would lock myself in my vanity room and put your podcast on to avoid this man when he would start berating me, sometimes for days at a time. So I truly appreciate you and your podcast being the distraction and support I needed to finally leave him. I feel so stupid for spending nearly 4 years with this asshole, but when you're in a DV situation, it's much harder to leave than you think. Now I'm happily married to a wonderful and hilarious man who supports all of my creepy and quirky interests. I'm an opera and burlesque performer, and I work at a true crime museum. So I'm truly living my best life, and I'm so very grateful for him and all of my support systems in my life. Now, let's get into the time I almost got kidnapped right out of my grandparents' yard. Let's set the scene. I'm Appalachian. I grew up in a tiny town in rural North Carolina. I don't want to completely dox myself, but this place isn't even counted on the census, and it's in the middle of nowhere. Picture cow pastures and farmland and trailer parks for miles. There's a single gas station and a Dollar General, and you have to drive at least 10 minutes to get to what we call town if you want to see civilization. And by civilization, I mean the singular Walmart. I got off the school bus at my grandparents' house. They helped raise me. My mom was a single mother who worked as a nurse and sometimes wouldn't get off until later on in the evening. I was 12 years old, going through the beginning of my emo phase. I was obsessed with Tokyo Hotel, and I would often spend my afternoons after school listening to their songs on my iPod Nano and singing at the top of my lungs and choreographing dances. Sometimes I would have my headphones in while riding my mini motorcycle or my Paz Kubota because they had quite a bit of farmland. But this day, I was out at the front of the house singing my heart out, making up scenarios about how Bill Kaulitz would see me singing one of my many, now scrubbed from the internet, YouTube videos and fall in love with me. God, I miss being that DeLulu. While I was in the middle of my make-believe concert, I noticed a black SUV pull into the driveway. My grandparents' house was a mid-century modern home, and I was out at the front door area, as we called it, but it never got used and was always locked, and the carport was around to my left, which was the only way to get back into the house. This is important later. Now, first, when this person pulled in, I thought it was my cousin's vehicle because he drove a dark green Tahoe. But I quickly realized it was not him, and this SUV was way too dark and had the windows tinted. Super sus looking back at it now. It wasn't uncommon for people to stop by my grandparents' house randomly because my pa owned the trailer park I grew up in. He built it from scratch as he had a grading business, so people would often come by to pay their lot rent or ask him and my Nana questions. However, I knew something was wrong when this nerdy, lanky, creepy-looking man got out of his car and immediately said hello to me. My heart sank, and I knew something was weird, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it. He was dressed nice, with a dress shirt and slacks, and he had glasses on, but something about him just made my alarm bells go off. My mama never changed the channel, and she raised me on Unsolved Mysteries and Forensic Files, so I was well aware of what creeps are out there at a young age. Not knowing what to even say to this man, I froze. I don't even think I said hello back. I noticed he was carrying an unmarked spray bottle with blue liquid in it and what looked to be like a microfiber cloth. Noticing my uneasiness, this man got closer to me and said, "We're going around town asking kids if they'd like to try out our new Kool-Aid drink. Would you like to try some?" My heart was in my throat. This motherfucker couldn't be serious. Was he talking about this Windex-looking shit that he had in the spray bottle? Was he trying to poison or chloroform me and take me with him? The only response my panicked brain could muster was, "No thanks, I'm diabetic." I had to literally squeeze by him and run around to the left of the house to get in the carport to get into the house. He very easily could have grabbed me as I was running past him. I was 85 pounds soaking wet, and I've always been a short and tiny person. Honestly, I don't know if he did try to grab me or not as I ran past. I didn't look back. Unfortunately, this was the only way that I could get away from him, because if I would have ran the opposite direction to the back of the house, the basement door was locked and I would have been completely trapped. So I knew I had to get inside to tell my Nana and call 911. Mind you, I'm not even diabetic. I still to this day don't know why that was the first excuse that came to my mind to get away, but I digress. The creeper remained outside lurking. The screen door had a window and I could clearly still see him out there. I immediately started telling my Nana about what happened and grabbed the house phone to dial 911 and tell them about this fucking creep potential kidnapper. But my Nana insisted that I not call and tried to get me to calm down. Unfortunately, my Nana had just started developing dementia. In my frantic state, I don't think she truly understood what I was trying to tell her in terms of what had just happened. But she went outside to confront this creep. She spent what felt like an eternity out there. When she walked back in, she told me this guy had a whole other story for her. Apparently, he was a vacuum cleaner salesman and asked my Nana if she would like to purchase one of the vacuum cleaners that he had in his trunk. She declined, obviously, and came back inside, and he took his time exiting our driveway. It felt like he was taking his time intentionally, possibly looking for me or another child. A few hours later, when my pa got home, I told him about what happened, and he was furious. He was my best friend and was always looking out for me, so it really unnerved him that this creep just got away. And then, of course, he got upset with my Nana for not letting me dial 911 to report this guy. I remember my mom being shaken when she came to pick me up that night, and she did her best to comfort me. Unfortunately, this experience kept me from going outside to play for a very long time, and as a chronically outside kid, that was really hard on my psyche. When this first happened, it just kept replaying over and over again in my head. I would have nightmares about being actually taken and killed by this man. Then I would have moments where I thought, maybe I was the delusional one. Did I hear him correctly? Did he really say he had a Kool-Aid drink? Did he even say the stuff about the vacuum cleaner to my Nana, or was that the dementia talking? I would often beat myself up for getting so close to him when I was running inside, even though that was my only option. I even blamed myself for being outside in the yard in shorts and a t-shirt in the summertime. It especially frustrates me because femmes, and especially children, should be able to wear whatever the fuck they want without the fear of being harmed. Thanks, rape culture. I felt ashamed for years that I didn't scream or cause a scene or kick this guy in the shins or something, because running away and not calling the cops possibly put other kids in danger. But I know now that as a 12-year-old, that was not my responsibility, and getting to safety was the best thing I could have done in that moment. Now as I'm pushing 30 and have all the Freaky Friday stories ringing in my ears, and I work at a true crime museum, I reflect on this situation and realize that I was absolutely not overreacting. As you ladies always say, good adults don't ask kids for help, or for anything for that matter. Even if this guy was truly a vacuum cleaner salesman or whatever, why didn't he just say that to begin with? He could have just been like, "Hey kid, I'm selling some vacuums. Are your parents around?" Why lead with the Kool-Aid thing? And what the fuck was that liquid in that unmarked container? It haunts me to this day. I always wonder if any other kids around town had any similar experiences with this guy. We never ended up hearing about it on the news, which, being in such a small town, spread very fast, so I don't think anything ever came of it. This dude could still be out there. He looked fairly young, so it's highly possible he's still roaming the streets. I often check my hometown's mugshots page to see if he's on there, but I haven't seen him yet. And it's been about 17 years since this happened. I sincerely hope this man has never harmed a child. Thank you so much for taking the time to read my story. It has been so cathartic to write this down and just put all of these complicated emotions I have about this situation out there. If you're hearing this, I hope my story resonated with you in some way. If you have kids, please reiterate stranger danger always. I've always been curious if anybody else had an encounter with this person or if I was the only one. And to anyone who is in an abusive situation, just know you are not alone. And even if it takes you years to get out, life is so much more beautiful on the other side. I'm so happy that I got to have my sweet Nana until 2016, and she is no longer suffering from her battle with dementia. I unfortunately lost my pa back in 2024, and it was the hardest thing I ever went through, as he was my rock. But I'm glad he is also no longer in any pain, and I know they're always watching over me. I'm in therapy. I have my sweet mama and husband, and my best friend, who is the Christy to my Heather, and outlets such as this podcast that help me feel like I'm not alone in this cruel and crazy world. Love y'all again so very much. Keep it creepy, Annette.
Annette, first of all, hell yeah, Annette. You are so brave and so strong to have left that situation. And don't say you feel stupid, whatever. You left when you left. You did the, you know, it's always like the best time was yesterday. The next best time is now. You left when you could and you did it right. And I'm so glad you're safe. And I'm glad it sounds like you're living your best life, working at a true crime museum. You're married to this awesome guy.
Yeah.
Man, I'm glad you're out of that.
The reflection you have on this of realizing at 12 years old, it was not your responsibility to try and keep other kids safe or report this man and all of those things. That's a hard thing to grapple with. Mm-hmm. And as a tween going into their teens and you're like, I don't want to play outside anymore. I mean, this was a traumatic event you went through. And like my therapist says, if trauma is anything that affects your ability to do your day-to-day life. So mm-hmm. if you're like, I can't go outside anymore because I'm scared I'm going to get kidnapped. This is the exact reason, you know, that you would mm-hmm. need to go to therapy for that. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you have and that you're living your best life. And I agree with your sentiment of remind everyone about stranger danger. Good adults don't ask kids for things. They don't need mm-hmm. help with things. As far as what was in that bottle and what he was doing, sir, if you were trying to joke, read the room, not the time. What are you doing? You're saying something to a young girl who everyone's fear as a kid is like, I'm going to get kidnapped. I'm going to get taken by somebody in a van.
Yeah, I was like, this was my story from back in 1951 when we weren't sure if they were, and there were still perverts out trying to snatch kids back then. You know, it's like at this point, an adult man coming up to a 12-year-old being like you said, unless the end of the sentences are your pen, can I speak to your parents? Like you said, I'm a vacuum salesman. Can I speak to your parents? That's an appropriate thing to ask a kid. But if it's like, you want to try what's in my bottle? No. And whatever was in the bottle, it doesn't matter. Many jurisdictions criminalize child luring, child enticement. So, you know, not to say this, he might have had a completely, you know, innocent, wink, wink, but a sufficient explanation for police. And, you know, they might have let him go, whatever, all that stuff, you know, we can't know. But just for our own sanity check, this is illegal. This is wrong. This is weird. Don't do this to kids. In case anybody was curious. But as far as the real red flag to me is the shifting story. We can, you know, given your Nana the benefit of the doubt, she does have dementia, but, you know, let's assume she was truthful when she came back in and that's what the guy said to her. That's weird. That's weird. That's another red flag that perhaps he is some kind of, I don't know. I don't think it's like a chloroform to the face situation, because in reality, I think you've got to hold chloroform much longer and stuff. But, you know, just get, even if he was going to just open the lid to have you try to drink, you know, they just get your arms around you. You know, it's just trying to get you in proximity, even if the actual material in the bottle is irrelevant. It's too weird. It's too weird. You did the right thing getting out of there.
And if he was making a joke, not funny. And no. Also, if you're selling vacuums, what's with this cleaner?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a vacuum salesman. But it seems like if you're testing on a vacuum, you would sprinkle stuff on a carpet and then vacuum it up. If you're testing out look how clean this will get your bathroom. That might make more sense. But I don't know. Yeah. But it's weird. I'm glad you came away as unscathed as you could have, but the mental toll, stuff like this really does take on you. And like you said, you feel kind of stupid. Like, what's this a big deal? that nothing really happened. I mean, if it was a big deal to you, then it was a big deal.
Yeah, like you said, if it's anything that affects how you operate, you know, going forward, and the fact that you recognize that and you are in therapy, that's something to be lauded most definitely. But I think in, especially as women, especially as young girls, when stuff happens to us, we often are minimizing it. We're kind of taught like fawn, you know, be quiet, you know, it's not that big of a deal. It's okay. It wasn't really that bad. And I think part of our stepping into our own and part of ushering in the matriarchy is that recognizing that everybody's lived experience is valid, and what you felt from that was a valid feeling. You know, it's the reassurance that you were not crazy, you were not making a big deal out of it. It is a weird thing for a man to do that. And absolutely, you should be able to play out front in shorts and a t-shirt or a tank top or whatever, because it's the summer and it's hot and you're a child, and anybody that sexualizes you is in the wrong. And
they're the problem.
They're the problem. And especially as we, you know, I have kids in my life that are these age. My middle niece just turned 12. The idea that she might feel this way, you know, if something happened to her, and she might feel this way, it helps us now who are grownups to think, okay, I want to be that pa in the relationship. Mm, you know, I want to be that adult that they know they can always come to us. And so thank you, Annette, for sharing your story, because I think it always helps us, you know, Christy and I, but also the listeners, you know, just kind of get that other side of it, of what a kid might be feeling if they go through a situation like this, that sometimes adults want to go like, oh, well, you know, you're okay. Nothing really happened, but you don't want to freak the kid out, but there might be a lasting impact of like, well, now I don't want to play outside. Now I don't want to. So breaking those things down early, you know, we all have a chance now that we're grown up, so we can help kids because of folks like you who are generous with their stories. So thank you.
And to touch on what you said at the very beginning about the abusive relationship you were in, you're exactly right. There's a lot of reasons why people can't leave an abusive relationship. And anytime I hear someone say, well, why didn't you just leave? I want to just throttle you, because like, why wouldn't you leave any relationship you're unhappy with? For a lot of reasons. And now you lump, oh, he is abusing me in every single way possible. I'm having to lock myself in the bathroom for days at a time to escape this man.
Mm-hmm.
That's awful. And for us to have been able to help in some small way get you through that is humbling, and we're honored.
It's a super honor. And yeah, if you're in a situation like that, you're in a survivalist situation. So the idea that someone's like, why didn't you just walk out? Why didn't the guy that cut his fucking arm off just pull his arm out and just walk off? Because sometimes we're in circumstances that we're in physical danger, and we have to consider exactly the safest way to extricate ourselves. And so I think that's what you did. You know, timing notwithstanding, you got yourself out when you needed to. And like Christy said, the fact that we could be any small part of that, you know, it was all you. But if we could be in your ears helping you out, then thank you for the opportunity.
Yes. Thank you, Annette, for sending that in.
Sinisterhood, we'll be right back. Ooh, I will tell you what's really fun is having a personal trainer in your pocket, in your ears, that is on your schedule, on demand, and actually helps you get better week to week, that you could do it in the comfort of your own office. And by you, I mean me. And by me, I mean I'm not going out. It's 105 degrees outside. So thank you, Ladder, for letting me have a trainer who's not even, you know, right there in my pocket. I don't have to invite anyone into my house.
Works with your schedule, and you can do it in air conditioning. Ooh-hoo. Sign me up,
baby.
What I love about the Ladder is that it's an actual plan. It's not just a library of random workouts that you have to scroll through and then you forget about them. Every week you get a new plan that builds on the last one, so your training is always moving forward through structured blocks. It feels like having a personal trainer right in your headphones. In-ear coaching walking you through every set with form reminders, cues, and most importantly, motivation. The app even remembers your weights and reps automatically, so you can actually see yourself getting stronger over time.
The great thing too, the variety on it is for real. You got Pilates, bodybuilding, kettlebells, glute-focused program, doing dumbbell workouts at home, whatever it is, there's a plan for you. You could train at home or take it with you to the gym. You also get a group chat with your actual coach who answers questions, and the community is a way to keep you accountable, and it feels genuine. Also, Ladder now includes nutrition tracking at no extra cost. That's food logging, macro insights built right into your training plan. All of that for less than a dollar a day. That is elite level personal training for a fraction of what you pay for a single session with a trainer in person.
Remove the guesswork with Ladder and get a real coach in your ear telling you exactly what to do for every workout. No thinking, everything planned for you. If you have an iPhone, head to ladder.fit/creepy and take a quick quiz to find your perfect ladder plan. Use our link and get a free 7-day trial with no credit card and $10 off your first month if you join. Well, this next one's from LJ and is called $1 Million Reward in Australia Cold Cases. Hi, lovely ladies. I just wanted to say, first up, how much I absolutely love you both and the show. My husband appreciates having another Texan voice in the house some days, as we live in my home state in Australia, and he is from Texas. My story is more my husband's story, but he's happy for it to be shared. He works at a prison here, and has for quite a while. He's used to seeing the worst types of people and on their worst days. This one night, he came home and I asked how work was. He threw a deck of cards on my lap and said, "I know your creepy ass would like this more than flowers or anything else." It was the prison deck of playing cards, which have cold cases on them. Each case had a reward from the South Australian police for information, between $200,000 to $1 million. Honestly, I didn't know we had these here, so I started to make two piles. One of, I know these crimes, and one of, to research. I asked how he got these home, and he said he confiscated them from an inmate, in his words, who kidnapped someone, killed her, and won't tell anyone where the body is. It was in the 80s, so you probably don't know about it. Surprise, surprise, I do know about it, because what else do I have to do but look into every terrifying crime in my city while I'm on maternity leave? Louise Bell, I said. Louise Bell was a 10-year-old girl who was kidnapped from her bedroom during the night of January 5th, 1983. The man responsible, a primary school teacher. He was also the father of one of her friends. I won't say his name, as he doesn't deserve to be remembered. I will refer to him as Dickhead. Anyway, my husband had asked Dickhead to go back to his cell, and after carrying on like an absolute 4-year-old, throwing his arms around, huffing and puffing, he eventually threw the cards at my husband and stomped his little nasty ass back to his cell. My husband put them in his pocket, and when he left work, he noticed them and lovingly brought them home for his weird wife. I've attached some photos of some well-known cold case cards in my state. My dad was best friends with Patricia Schmidt on the cards. You may have heard some of these cases also from Case File. If you want an absolute rabbit hole to fall into, I suggest looking into the Beaumont Children, Snowtown Murders, and the Somerton Man. Adelaide, South Australia is weird, but I swear we aren't all murderers. I'm going to write in my own story about when we came across an Indigenous spirit in the Outback. Sending lots of love from down under. Thanks for reading.
Well, we've done an episode on the American version of these cards, so I'm glad that other countries are adopting them because they're apparently quite effective.
Yeah, I couldn't remember if it was a mini-sode or a main feed episode. It was a mini-sode? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and kind of the lore behind how these got started were detectives that were like, who better to ask about cold cases than people in prison that are hearing cellmates and other prisoners talk about them? Mm-hmm. And it was very effective, and they solved a lot of cases that way. So I am glad that it's happening in other countries as well. And to explain to anybody that doesn't know, they are literal playing cards, like, you know, Jack of Hearts, Eight of Spades, everything. But they have the victims' picture and then their name and a brief description of what happened to them.
And, you know, in some cases it's been that an inmate is playing going, "Oh my gosh, I talked to a guy who said he killed a girl this age in this place and her name was Susie," or whatever. And it has been effective in them coming forward with the information. Your husband sounds awesome, as do you. And it's very, for whatever reason, it's very funny that the Texan's like, "Yeah, I got these cards at work, honey. You want these?" but no, it's the eeriness of being that close to not just a killer, but one that has still not come forward to give the information that would help give a family some much needed peace, I think is a particular kind of evil. And I'm sorry mm-hmm. your husband has to interact with that, but it sounds like he's, you know, he's fine with it because that guy's acting like a baby and throwing a fit like an asshole. So your husband's like, yeah, throw your fit. Give me your cards, whatever. Go get your pinky.
Give them to my weird wife back home.
Truly, man.
Well, I hope that Louise Bell's remains are able to be found for that closure for her family. And this guy never gets to play cards again.
No, absolutely not. Well, thank you. Now we got another deck of cards we can go through as well.
Yeah.
Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
Well, this next one's from Jay and is called I Didn't Know What to Do. Hi, Queens. You two ladies are the best, and thanks for supporting this Sinisterhood family. I went back and forth on if I was going to write in. I've been trying to keep my mind busy, but when I heard your first story on Freaky Friday last week, I felt like I needed to get this experience off my chest. I've been sitting in shock for a week now, in shock of what happened, in shock of how it happened, and most of all, in shock of my response to him. I went out on a few dates with a guy. The dates went really well. I travel a lot, so we didn't get to go out too many times, but had been talking daily for about 5 weeks when we decided to go away for the weekend. He was taking me to this really nice resort in a coastal town a couple hours away. During the drive, there were a couple instances of road rage, which I was taken back by. Nothing that I found very concerning, but it was definitely a red flag and turnoff for me. He had driven 2 hours to pick me up and another 2 hours to the resort, so I didn't want to complain about his attitude and seem ungrateful. We checked in and went directly to this incredibly nice dinner at a breathtaking restaurant. We wined and dined over laughter and great conversation. At this point, I had let go of the uncomfortableness during the drive, and I was feeling really into him. After dinner, we stopped by the hotel bar to grab a drink for the room. As we got into the bar, we were laughing and having a great time. The bar was not full, but it was busy for 9 p.m. on a Friday night. He walked up to the bar and ordered our drinks, as I was standing behind him. Then, without saying anything, he turned around and slapped me. It took me a second to register what had happened. I was in complete shock. The slap wasn't very painful, but it didn't matter. "I don't know what the fuck made you think that was okay to do to me," I said, still too far in shock to even think about what to do. "Are you serious right now? That was playful. It didn't hurt. I was just playing around. Don't overreact," he said to me. This man was almost a foot taller than me and had at least 70 pounds on me. It doesn't matter how gentle he thought he was being, it was still going to hurt. I was horrified, and all I could think of was, I don't want to cause a bigger scene. As he continued to pester me, he asked, "Are you really mad right now?" I just wanted to get out of the bar, so I said we could discuss it upstairs. Something happened in this moment that I am so grateful for, and I have thought about these men all week. In one moment, one of the bartenders got the attention of my date, handed him his drink, and had him settle the tab a few feet away at the bar. At the same moment, another bartender walked around the other side of me so I was facing away from my date and handed me my drink. He put his hand on my shoulder and looked me directly in the eyes and asked, "Ma'am, are you okay?" I was so embarrassed and I just wanted to leave the room, so I said I was. I wish I would have said something different, but it meant so much to know someone in that room cared enough to ask me. I went upstairs with my date and nothing else bad happened to me. We talked for a couple hours about why that was inappropriate and how I expect to be treated in a relationship. At a certain point, I realized I didn't want to be there anymore. But alcohol had been involved, and I was scared of what he would do if I actually made him angry. I kept thinking about how the most dangerous time is when you leave. So we went to bed, and he took me home in the morning without incident. I've been struggling with why I didn't leave or ask for help. Why I didn't leave when I knew I should. I've been hard on myself about that. But the thing I haven't mentioned is that I was in a very abusive relationship before. I stayed for almost 2 years. So even though I didn't immediately leave this time, I did leave. I told the people in my life immediately, so I had support to work through the emotional trauma this brought up. I took the day off work, so I had the space to process. I did all the right things this time. I can't explain why I didn't walk away immediately. Probably one part learned behavior, one part fear, and one part societal influences. But I can say history did not repeat itself. I regained in hours what took me years to regain last time. My power was not lost and my light was not dampened. Thanks for reading this. It means a lot that you've shared your own experiences with unhealthy and abusive relationships. It creates a safe space for us listeners to be heard and seen. I know the feelings I have about this experience is universal to a lot of other strong, amazing people out there. As a palate cleanser, I've included photos of Odin, aka the Bean, the gray cat, and Thistle the Whistle, aka the Whistleworm. Beautiful little fur babies.
I want you to give yourself more credit in this situation because, like you said, you got out of a, you know, a 2-year scenario. And just because we don't act perfect in a situation thereafter doesn't mean we haven't made progress in a situation. And so the fact that you did recognize it when you could, and you honestly probably were assessing unseen things, you know, there's dangers we feel in our stomach and our gut. And so, of course, in that moment, you asserted your boundary and then you remained safe. And shout out to those bartenders for saying something.
Yeah, I'm always, it always makes me feel hopeful when you hear bartenders or servers that see a situation like this mm-hmm. and act on it. And for them to have it down so seamlessly mm-hmm. makes me believe that they have a protocol in place if they see stuff like this, and it's in place because they do see stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
So for them to speak out and ask you and separate the two of you, you know, that is very smart. And like Heather said, it's okay that you said, no, I'm okay. Because when I read your story and it was, he turned around and slapped me.
Gasped.
I was like, what? What?
No.
Who thinks this is okay to do ever? I don't give a shit if you're playing or not. I've been married for 11 years in November. If Tommy playfully slapped me, I don't know, we'd make it to a 12th. I promise you that.
The last time I got playfully slapped, I twisted the guy's nuts like a door that wouldn't unlock until he fell to the ground. But I was 19 and I was drunk and I had a humongous boyfriend behind me. And this was like a friend of a friend. You know what I mean? So completely, you know, I had backup. Like that's, you're not trying to get into a fight. If you did have this guy's address, I was going to buy him a drink. It's a Molotov cocktail, but I'd love to hand deliver it to his house. But no, folks like this, where they behave in an criminal way, that's battery. You actually are not allowed to hit other adults ever for any reason, joking or not joking. And then, so for him to commit a crime against you in full view of other adults, and then to try and immediately Darvo you and be like, you're overreacting. I was mm-hmm. just kidding. Blah, 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 blah. No, from a reasonable human behavior perspective, you did nothing wrong. This man is batshit. Like, what is happening? He's driving like that on the road, which again, you're already, when you're in somebody else's hands like that, I will not fault you for doing whatever you have to do, fight or flight or freeze or fawn or whatever you got to do mm-hmm. to just straight up survive. And again, same with the bartenders, because you don't know if they're like, I'll separate you, and he flips out or whatever. So the fact that you were like, as soon as I'm back on solid ground and I know, you know, I'm around my people, I'm getting out, there's nothing wrong with that. So mm-mm. you played it right. And I'm proud of you for saying something in the moment, because even that's hard to just is. Go, I don't know what the fuck made you think that was okay. Jerking, as Nancy would say, jerk a knot in his tail. Like, what the fuck?
Because it is such a shocking thing that you're kind of shocked into silence. So amazing clap back to him. And men like him, mm-mm. they thought they were being funny and playful, which why is that funny and playful? Who taught you that? That's a problem. Maybe, I don't know, it's the media.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the Callaway driver commercial that's come out this week, which just isn't domestic violence the funniest thing?
Hello.
Many people signed off on that ad before it made it to print?
Yeah.
I bet they were all men.
You know?
Fucking crazy. But it's men like that that are like, oh, you can't take a joke. And it's because when you do come back at them, even though they don't want to admit it, inside they're just burning with like shame and embarrassment. Mm-hmm. They don't think anything they did was wrong, but they're pissed off that they got called out. Who gives a shit? Twists mm-hmm. or nuts until they fall to the ground.
This will say you don't have a duty to retreat. I'm not sure where you are, but whatever. I don't know that a cop is gonna take the word of a man who has two bartenders that are like, no, it was crazy out of nowhere. He just turned around and whacked her in the face.
That's
like,
an insane thing to do. I wish I knew in his mind before he turns around what he's thinking.
I don't know.
Hey, we're at a hotel.
I'm a hitter in
we're
the
about
face.
To go up to a hotel room. You know what would be fun? If I just turned around and smacked her across the face.
I mean, to me, it's like someone who's testing boundaries to see how far they can get and how, and I think you showed them not far. You know what? I'm going to tell you exactly how I feel about it. But no, I think you did the right thing in this situation. And guys like that are just they're trying to see where the boundaries are and how far they can push them and how far they can get. But I followed, or I don't follow, but it came on my FYP, a guy named Miles Burris, and he's like this jack guy with these boxing gloves. And it says like POV, your husband teaching you self-defense. And he's like, this is what you got to do. He's like, boom, mashed potatoes, boom. Talking about punching him in the head. And he was like, punch him in the stomach, hit him with the tomato soup. And he's very silly about it. But I think what the whole kind of TikTok is trying to say is like, we need the guys like that, that are willing to use their strength to teach us how to, and he's like, this is how you know if they look like weirdos. He's like, if they have these glasses on, I think partway he's trying to be funny, but the guys like him, guys like the bartenders, like I know the matriarchy is not women will put their feet on men's throats. It is, we all are each other's keepers and make sure that we are one big community that are helping each other out regardless of our gender. So I'm glad that you had those folks that were your backup. And, you know, if we need self-defense, go look up that Miles
If you need
Burris
to put
back.
Your foot on a man's throat, though, in a situation like this, do what you got to do. I'm you know not going to fault you for it.
No, grab a beer bottle, break it off, and stab him in the ribs. Whatever.
Who
rib
cares?
Check.
Oh, were you upset about that? That hurt? Oh, I was just joking.
Sister's like, yeah, you told your nieces about how you grabbed that guy in the nuts. Because I kept telling him, I was like, this is only for self-defense. We don't need to be going attacking anybody. Don't start any fights. Finish them.
Yeah. I don't start fights. I will finish them.
No. I was like, I'll tell you how it ends, baby. So I'm sorry that this happened to you, but I'm proud of you for getting out, especially given, you know, the past that you had. And fuck that guy. May burn
him. Yeah, fuck him. And he's probably alone, miserable somewhere,
right,
as he should be.
Being all pissed off. Sinisterhood, we'll be right back. Well, this next one's from my daughter, Anonymous, and the subject line is, from poisoning to words from beyond. Hello, lovely hosts of Sinisterhood, your wonderful husbands who clearly are supportive and awesome, and the giant, amazing community of listeners. I recently wrote in about how I may have foiled my aunt's attempt to poison my uncle by being a crime nerd, Freaky Friday, episode 208. I wanted to provide a bit more context about the why my aunt blames my uncle for their child's death, and also share the crazy, weird thing that happened a few years later in relation to all of this, because it got supernaturally weird. Consider this part two to the story. The rift between my uncle and aunt was first carved when my uncle kicked his younger son, my favorite cousin, out of the house over a fashion choice. They lived in a rural part of Indiana where any sign of nonconformity or gayness was met with extreme prejudice, despite said fashion option being a gender-neutral style at the time. Welcome to the late 80s when a lot of gendered boundaries were being broken wide open. I'm sure there was a lot of teenage rebellion and conflict behind the incident, and much of the information I have about the situation came out after his death, in bits and pieces and conversations which people thought I couldn't hear. For context, when I say my favorite cousin, I should state that we weren't super close. Distance, an age gap, and lack of contact information at the time meant I only saw him briefly at family gatherings, maybe a couple times a year. That said, when we did see each other, he was a goofy, fun person for whom I had no small amount of hero worship. After being kicked out, he returned to university for at least a week. To my surprise, during that time, and out of the blue, he sent me a postcard. It was a blank card upon which he had doodled some ridiculous cartoons and added a few heavy metal band logos. no mention of what had happened to him, just a friendly hello and a promise to send me a demo of the music he and his metal band were creating. With the experience I have now, I know it was his way of reaching out to a friendly presence as his own family had rejected him. At the time, I had no knowledge of this, and I was over the moon. It was the first time he had reached out to me outside of family gatherings. I was probably visible from space with the glow of joy I was feeling that he had remembered me between family reunions. I received the postcard on a Friday, and I had a half-written response by the time I left the next morning for a Girl Scout fishing expedition. I was halfway through the fishing trip into the phenomenally gross cleaning the fish lesson when my father showed up early, bundled me and my smelly, half-cleaned fish into the car, and headed home. He said very little until we reached the house. My mother was waiting on the front porch when we arrived, tears on her face. When I saw her expression, the first words out of my mouth were, "Who died?" I had gone from one of the best days ever in receiving the postcard to the news of my cousin's death in less than 24 hours. My cousin had been in a horrible car accident that morning. The driver of the car he was in fell asleep at the wheel. They crossed the center line, hit an oncoming car, and, well, I've heard descriptions of the result, and it was horrific. Wear your seatbelt, folks. If he had, I might still have my favorite cousin. Well, grief does weird things to people, and my aunt and her other son both blamed my uncle for the situation. The poisoning was only one thing in a long line of abuse he took from both his wife and elder son for years after. Violence, emotional torment, theft of his possessions, a lot of family skeletons came out to dance. My uncle is no saint, but he doesn't deserve to be murdered. He punished himself for years and has been punished, even though he wasn't the one at the wheel. And then it got weird. Years later, when I myself was in university, I had a visitation from my cousin. I was reading in bed and heard someone say my name. It was a familiar voice, and while not threatening, it did give me an immediate chill, and the room went from warm to cool. I looked around before looking back at my book. I said, "Yes?" aloud. "I need you to tell them it was just the trial unfinished," the voice said. "We would have gotten through it if I had lived." I knew precisely who it was when I heard that and what he meant. "Why me?" I asked. "You are the only one who's listening," was his answer. I agreed, and as abruptly as it had began, he was gone. The trial unfinished sounded odd, but I knew what he meant. They would have worked things out eventually if the conflict had not been interrupted by his untimely passing. I fully understood the assignment he had given me. And despite being completely boggled by the experience, I was happy to know I was listening and available. However, trying to convince anyone in that conservative family I'd had a conversation with my dead cousin's disembodied voice years after the tragedy wasn't exactly an easy assignment. He wanted me to call my Southern Baptist gay-hating aunt and uncle and deliver a message from the dead. "Good one, cuz. Thanks for that." The conversation sat with me for a few weeks. I couldn't stop thinking about it, like he was quietly there, poking me with a spectral stick. The problem was, I hadn't seen or heard from any of his family in the years since his funeral. Even if I knew the right words, calling someone out of the blue with such a completely bonkers tale was something my painfully shy little heart could barely contemplate without panic, let alone enact without help. I finally decided to call my mother. She would listen. Maybe she could tell my uncle for me, or at least give me advice on how to approach it. To her credit, she believed me without any hesitation. Another surprise. This sort of thing has happened several times before to several members of my family. Stories for other Freaky Fridays. And she insisted I should absolutely call and tell my uncle at least. She gave me the phone number and told me to call her back when I was done because she wanted to hear all about it. No pressure there either. I called the number immediately. Hallelujah and thank the gods, it went to voicemail. I relayed my spectral conversation in a rush and ended with, "Here's my number if you want to talk to me about it." My uncle never reached out, so I just hoped for the best. I didn't have the guts to call again. I've only seen my uncle once or twice since then, and he has stoically ignored me. Maybe he didn't recognize me. Maybe he didn't feel comfortable bringing it up. Maybe he thinks I'm a demon from the nether regions that would possess him if I spoke to him. Wouldn't be the first time my snowflake liberal ass has been called that, so, you know, there's precedent. It clearly didn't help. It was a few years after this that the suspected poisonings began. Anyway, thanks again for giving a voice to those who need it, and for the care you take in relaying the stories from your fans. Your voices always cheer me up, even when it's a serious issue you're covering. The best part about this podcast? Knowing none of us are alone in our struggles, our freaky little adventures, and in facing that which we do not understand, or trials we should not have to face, but do anyway. Much love to you all and all the Sinisterhood listeners. I'm so glad to have this community. I may not speak much on the Patreon or the socials, but I do listen and feel a kinship with all of you who listen to the podcast.
Oh, Anonymous. Man, I remember the original story you sent in, of course. And I appreciate this context. What a horrible thing for a parent to lose their child and to be blamed for that loss when in reality, I mean, did kicking him out of the house lead to him being killed in a car accident? Probably not. No. You know, there were a ton of steps in between those things. When you're the other parent and the sibling and you're just grieving and need someone to blame, I think this is an example of when that happens, and it gets carried to the extreme by like, and now we're going to poison you and kill you because we blame you for this person's death.
Yeah, definitely a redirection of the grief of loss of the husband / brother at the uncle who, you know, he was acting how I'm sure a lot of dads in the 80s acted. It's not good. But like you said, it's not that night he walked right out. You know, he was at university. It was removed. But it sounds like he blamed himself. Not only that, but absolutely suffered under what your aunt was doing. We'll never forget the visual that you described of your uncle being in the doghouse, having to hide himself to be on the phone.
Yeah.
You know, that's so scary. Where you like, you don't even feel safe in your own house. I am glad he's safe. And, you know, as far as your message from your cousin landed and whatnot, like you cannot choose for your uncle whether to receive that message. All your cousin asked you to do was to deliver it. So I think in the way that you could and how you did it, you delivered it. And if your uncle, maybe he always held on to that, or he started talking to your cousin after that, you know, you can't know just because somebody doesn't tell you that they received that voicemail, but maybe he re-listens to it. You never know. So I say you did the right thing.
For sure. And he obviously thought you were a safe person, your cousin, both in life and beyond, reaching out to you, like you said, because he knew you were a safe person. And I know that feeling of someone older in your family that you're like, they're so cool. Mm-hmm. And they probably don't even know I'm alive. And then you get a postcard or something and it's like a celebrity just contacted you. So I hope you can take some solace in knowing that he knew he had family that loved and cared about him.
Yeah, when he thought about who to write to, he's like, you know who I'm going to write to? Little cuz knows. And the same from the great beyond. And thank you also for your very kind words about the show. I felt very seen, you know, knowing none of us are alone in our struggles, our freaky little adventures, and in facing that which we do not understand, or trials we should not have to face but do anyway. Man, you really wrapped it up. Thank you very much. And that is an honor that you said that.
Yeah.
Sinisterhood, we'll be right back. Well, this next one is from Lindsay, and the subject line is The Matriarchy Traitors. Hi, ladies. Thank you so much for everything you do. It's so nice to listen to your podcast and know I am not alone in thinking, this is crazy, right? It is so cathartic. On to why I'm finally compelled to write after listening for so long. I was at my daughter's dance class, taking the 45 minutes of peace to turn off my brain, when a mother who has a daughter in the same class as mine approached me just to chat, as we usually do when we run into each other at school or kid events. Keep in mind, we're sitting in a room full of moms, all waiting for their little darlings to finish dance class. Anyway, she said, I know you used to work for the school system, so I wanted to ask you about something. She turned her phone toward me, and it said, ICE. My heart dropped. I gathered myself and explained our policies on protecting the kids at all costs. We are to filter any questions, concerns, etc., directly to the superintendent because our state does not yet have an agreement with ICE. Then she said one thing I was hoping she had missed throughout all the chaos of our world. But what about the teacher in the news who called ICE about her student's parents? She had a point. So I'm going to say to you ladies, and maybe to the podcast world, what I said to her and continue to scream into the void. The first training teachers receive when they come back in August is how to protect your children from bullets. We learn how to wrap their wounds and carry or drag them to safe places. We learn where the best hiding spots are in the classroom. 99.9% of us take that to heart and think about it almost every day for 180 days a year. We fight and protect your kids every single day to the best of our abilities. There are people like Ghislaine Maxwell, Pam Bondi, Christy Noem, Caroline Leavitt, some woman in this dance room, etc., who are the 0.1%. Those are the mean girls from high school who joined in with the guys as they made fun of the other girls. Fuck them. This means there are women like Hillary Clinton, Michelle Obama, the women's hockey team, Representative Jasmine Crockett, AOC, Heather, Christy, and the list goes on of women who are doing the right thing, who are trying to help us now and create examples for our girls in the future. This fellow mom and I put our children in a Spanish immersion program so they can understand different cultures, and we both know those teachers will keep our girls safe. Please know that there are more of us on the right side than on the wrong side. You have my permission to use me as a safe person, whatever that means for you, and know my family has your back. I think it is so disheartening to see some women who have the privilege to have a position of power that so many have fought for use it to keep the abusive men in power. It almost makes me more mad at them than the abusive men. Please remember, though, that there are more of us ready to, as a brilliant woman said on the last Freaky Friday episode, tell the patriarchy to suck my dick. Be loud, be proud, fuck them up.
Well, you are brilliant, and I... You say that probably once a week.
I'm like, who said that? Oh, little old me.
Oh, me? Oh, me? That does sound like me.
I mean, being the Dolly Partons, too. I mean, well, I'd heard of the list, you know, but thank you for putting us on this list. That was that's a huge honor.
That's an honor to be included with those other names. And we were recently talking about this, just the mean girls that are the pick-me girls from high school that wanted to be cool, so they shit on the girls when the guys would, and for whatever reason, never grew out of it. Mm-hmm. And now they're adults, and they have the same behavior, and it shows up in many ways. Mm-hmm. And to anyone that has people like that in their life, I hope you're not that person. I assume if you're listening to this podcast, you're not. Mm-mm. Don't be that person. Like, what is good about that? Like, lift each other up, especially women. We already have it hard enough. Don't make it harder for your fellow woman by siding with the enemy, the minemy. Just coin that phrase.
Trademark.
Feel free to use it. And I'm not saying all men are enemies. The men that are kind of being discussed in the same circle of like Christy Noem and Pam Bondi and Ghislaine Maxwell. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Those are terrible, horrible men. And without the help of women, they couldn't stand as tall as they do.
No, truly. I mean, in the all the Epstein documentaries and stuff, they were like, if Epstein was fire, Ghislaine Maxwell was gasoline. You know, like it really spread and made it worse. I think much like with dismantling white supremacy brick by brick by hand, which we have to do on our each individually have to do it for ourselves. And, you know, realizing our blind spots, the things, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day that like our, you know, growing up, we didn't learn any of like redlining. We didn't learn about systemic racism. We didn't think in those
weren't
terms.
Even phrases that they, were I mean, invented.
If they existed, they were like some scholar, you know, had them somewhere and they weren't teaching me, you know, even if I was in advanced, whatever, history, government, whatever in high school.
I was never taught that either. And I was in advanced classes too.
Right. You're like, what? This isn't part of it. But, you know, when I'm in college volunteering on the weekends with some teenagers and they're teaching the teens and I'm like, oh, they're like, did you know about this? I'm like, I did not. I'm learning with you right now. But similar to that, I mean, I think we went, not that it's over, but I'm glad that it began and there were documentaries and more books and stuff in 2020 that we're still deconstructing white supremacy. Obviously, the job is not done. I'm hoping that we can deconstruct our tethers to the patriarchy, which it includes, I think the question is, why do women act like that? Is because they want to be, you know, Papa's little master. And you have to remind women like that, that you're your own master, lady. Like, what are you doing? Why are you serving anyone, much less a piece of shit like that? So it is difficult when you see women who have not done the deconstruction and or you know, are frankly unwilling to in some cases because they like the proximity. And it is a very prevalent thing, particularly among women that look like you and me. White ladies, you know, tend to want to, you know, at least you're one rung above any other women or one rung above any other people who are of a different color. So I think these type of steps, acknowledging it, talking to other people, you know, being frank in your beliefs when someone asks you about it is what helps. So just kind of like, yeah, you don't believe that? Like, oh, huh. Well, yikes. Like,
yeah.
We've got two different descriptions of morality. Mm-hmm. Oh no. My goodness.
And as you ended with, you're a safe person and being a safe person and letting other people know, especially women, that you are a safe person. I think you must give off that aura if, you know, your friend knew that she could and can't even say it out loud because you're in a room with a bunch of dance moms who knows what they believe, but you don't want to set anybody up. So you literally have to write ICE, type it out on your phone and show it to somebody. And it shouldn't be this hush-hush conversation. Mm-hmm. We should all be like, yeah, fuck ICE. And if they come to our schools and they try to do something, then here's the protocol. Here's what we do. We're going to protect your kids. Teachers, I bow down to all of you to hear you say in the first couple weeks, or this is what you learn to do for the unlikely, or is it, event that a school shooting might occur. Just the first week of school, what do my kids do? Drills for these exact same scenarios. So just like that shouldn't be a hot take that, like, we don't want this happening in our schools. We also don't want people's parents being snatched out of a carpool line or a child being snatched out of their school because some men in masks with guns think that they have the right to do that.
Yeah, criminals in masks and guns, in my opinion. Well, I think you're right, though. It is what teachers do for our country and in the face of what is – not quite stated, but based on actions, I think can be inferred direct opposition from those in power to make their jobs as difficult as possible. The indignity of having to buy your own extra school supplies when I worked at the law firm, they weren't like, did you bring your notebooks and pens? That's chaos. Like, that's insane. No, they gave me pens and printers and shit. I didn't have to bring my own stuff. So the fact that teachers have to bring their own stuff and whatnot, and that we don't have fully funded schools, it makes me feel insane, because I was reading about my own hometown like 110 years ago, and they're like, we really need to fund schools. I'm like, we've been fucking saying this for 115 years.
Centennial.
Yeah, we're getting there. So I applaud all teachers. Thank you all for what you do. And the it's insane that we're like, by the way, you're going to have to learn how to trauma dress a wound and bring your own glue sticks, because we're not going to give you those either. And also, you're going to have to feed your own students. And also, you know, it's crazy. But that's the matriarchy, baby. We're going to make sure everyone is cared for and has what they need.
Yeah. And that is common with a lot of schools. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of schools are working towards bettering that situation, and my kids' schools included. Nice. So it's very heartening to see, like, they don't have to buy their own supply. You know, it's like they're waiting for them, and there's snacks for kids that can't bring their own, and, you know, there's donations and everything to help out everybody. So it really does take a village, and I hope that those that are privileged enough to not have shoes to send your kids to school in, or not have a backpack, that you can put yourself in someone else's shoes and be the safe person instead of just, it's easy to get tunnel vision. Like, well, I don't want to see that. That makes me uncomfortable. So I'm just going to keep living my cush life. Mm-hmm. Okay. But I'd like to leave this world better than how I found it.
Mm-hmm. No, I think so. WWDPD, like, she would make sure every kid mm-hmm. has a book. She makes sure every kid has a backpack, every kid has shoes. And you don't have, you know, it's like, you don't have to be the one, like, well, I don't have shoes to get to every kid. That's okay. You could be the one that creates the shoe drive, right? You could be the one that creates the backpack drive. So you, sometimes it's all a matter of just being the one that raises your hand and getting involved and stuff. So mm-hmm. thank you for being be loud, be proud, and fuck them up, Lindsay. Mm-hmm. You said it right. You said it right. Sinisterhood, we'll be right back. Well, this final one is from Skelly, and the subject line is Elderly Native American Ghost in the Florida Panhandle. Hey, y'all. Longtime listener, first-time submitter. Florida is a diverse state. You have the nightlife of Miami, the beaches and scrub forests on the Forgotten Coast, whatever the hell's happening in Central Florida. But I am from a small town in the Panhandle that seems like an extension of South Georgia. Pine trees, red clay, mud bogging. This story takes place when I was about 12 years old, in the early 2000s. I was staying the night at my best friend's house. We were playing hide-and-go-seek at night with her older brother and some neighborhood kids. The neighborhood was a string of houses along a dirt road with woods in between. The game went through several rounds uneventfully. We were having a blast. In the next round, I hid by myself. I laid on my belly, tactical style, in some tall grass on their front lawn. No one else was near me that I could see, but the house was within my line of sight. I was laying there, waiting for the seeker to start seeking, when I looked up, and in front of me, I saw an elderly Native American woman staring at me from 2 yards away. She was glowing in blue. A ghost? Still staring, she began slowly drifting toward me, one hand outstretched. I noted an arrowhead or some other small token in her hand, as if she was offering it to me. She seemed to be rubbing it with her thumb as she held it out to me. I felt like time slowed down. I still couldn't see any of the other children near me in the dark. I quickly weighed my options. The way I saw it, if I took the item, it could be a really cool, amazing gift. Or I could die. Or swap places with her. Or she could take over my body. With only one positive option, I said fuck it and ran to the lighted porch attached to the house. I fully shut down the game of hide and seek, and we found some other sleepover activities to do inside. At that time in my life, I was certainly more open and welcoming to paranormal entities and spirits, etc. My mom was a pagan then. I'll have to write in again soon about the time I went to a Yule ritual with her and some shit went down. I learned fairly quickly to stand my ground, LOL Florida, and to assert myself to the level I am comfortable with spirits. Mostly, that means being left the fuck alone. Echoing what so many others have said, y'all are the best podcast on the air for all of the reasons. Also, my mom passed last September just before her 56th birthday, and knowing y'all get it means something to me. It's a shitty club we all hope we don't join one day. Thanks. Love y'all. Skelly.
Oh, Skelly, I'm so sorry about the loss of your mom. That mm-hmm. is so rough and at such a young age, too. Mm-hmm. I would have taken it.
You're taking the amulet or whatever?
I feel gift? Like if I see, if I felt threatened, yeah. And as a kid, I mean, I'm sure just fears coursing through your veins. If it's being extended as an offering, and I think it's like, okay, I don't know. I think I'm going to take it.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is you're like, could you switch spots or whatever? But when something approaches you that's like glowing and blue and it's not like coming at you, but it's sort of like, oh, like floating towards you. I could see the temptation for sure. Absolutely. Cause you know, It's majestic. It's something that's just like glowing at you.
How are you? My line of thinking with things like this is always, I don't want to always wonder what if or mm-hmm, what could have happened, because you're not going to get that moment back. Mm-hmm. Are you going to switch places? Maybe. I don't know. Maybe you can switch back though, but you got to take it so you know and then you can give us answers because I've never been approached.
Right. I need to know. I mean, you hear in like folklore and stuff, some people say don't accept a gift. You know, it might, you know, certain fairy lore might say, like, if you eat the food near the fae traps or whatever. So it was interesting that your natural inclination as a child was like, I could die. It could take over my body, that you like were considering all these things. But a brief Googling, there is a Pacific Northwest coast tribe that has a type of spirit that tempts people into the woods, but it's not, I think it's a male presence. And I think it is a food object that is being offered versus, like you said, perhaps like an arrowhead or something physical. But, I think that it is kind of a swap situation, and you kind of come into the fae realm kind of, or the other realm. So,
see, if I'd taken it, I'd be living in another realm. So
you never know.
You were smarter than me.
It's or what's the other realm like?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. Where am I going?
Hang on, I need some more information on the other realm. And can you get back? Is it a little monster situation where you can hop back and forth? Like, is Howie Mandel involved? If so,
do you get there from underneath your bed?
Yeah, you might. You might. So I'm glad you're still here on this side of it, though, because if a lot of times with those things, you can't know until you're already in the other realm. And then they're like, no, there's no way back. And you're like, son of a bitch. Yeah. I need terms and conditions. Who am I? Am I going to read the terms and conditions? They're like, please read and sign before we let you in the spirit realm. And you're like, swipe, 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 sign. Mm-hmm. It's going to be our downfall.
Agree.
Apple iTunes or whatever terms and conditions. But man, you're here to tell the tale. Well, if anybody else in the Florida panhandle, if you're from the Florida panhandle and live to tell about it, or have seen something like this, please let Skelly know that she's not alone.
Man, if you accepted the offering, switched, came back.
Dude.
Please write in.
Yeah, I want to know if the doppelganger is taking over your life and you're the doppelganger. Write us. Sinister Hood Podcast.
We won't know.
We won't know.
We couldn't. Probably.
Yeah. Like, I chose not to take the gift. It's like, that's exactly what the doppelganger would say.
That is. Well, doppelgangers or not, thank you so much for everyone that's sending your Freaky Friday stories today. If you have an odd but true story, maybe you've encountered Bigfoot, you've seen a UFO, you had a brush with true crime, or you felt the presence of an otherworldly being, send them in at sinisterhood.com/Freaky Friday. Speaking of freaky, have you got something creepy caught on camera, found a weird or unexplainable clip online? Maybe you just have a funny video you want us to see. Send it our way and we'll live react to it during Sunday Scaries, our weekly live stream over on Patreon every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Central. Totally free. You put in your email address, you get immediate access to the chat, to the stream, to a lot of free content just for signing up for free as a thank you. And now, if you can't make it, we're releasing the audio on Monday, so you can still feel like you were a part of it.
Like you were there.
Well, if you like our free episodes like the one you heard, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next, or you can dive into over 1,000 hours of bonus content, like Judge Christie, where I rule on petty grievances you bring before the court. True Crime Headlines, where we break down the latest news and updates in true crime. Heather Saves, where anything Heather has found late night scrolling could be discussed. And Am I the Asshole, Unpopular Opinions, and other subreddits that we feel require our input.
We also offer free trials. That is where you join at any of the tiers for a week. You can check out all the perks, binge everything, and then cancel anytime before the trial is over without getting charged. Or if you stick around, do an annual membership, you get 1 month free. You get all kinds of stuff all year long.
Ad-free episodes, monthly live stream Q&As, quarterly live stream bonus content. We let you all vote on what you want to see. Weekly audio bonus content, like all the segments we just mentioned. Minisodes, merch discounts, and a community of the best listeners on the whole internet.
Head over to sinisterhood.com and click shop on the top banner to check out merch like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show. Thank you so much for the kind words and 5 stars. You can submit topics and cases you'd like us to cover, and you'll find fun things like topic-based playlists and, of course, tickets for Crime Wave at Sea 2027. We just did an interview yesterday with KERA, and we spoke a lot about Crime Wave, and it just got me super pumped. Mm-hmm. I was already pumped, and now I'm super pumped.
I'm super pumped. And then I got a book in the mail. No promises, but it might be what we end up covering on Crime Wave. We're going to do a little bit of brainstorming while we go on a trip coming up soon. And we're going to bring you a badass Crime Wave show. And not to mention, just have a fun time with y'all, with Henry and Ed, with Casey from Case File, which got a mention today on the show.
Yeah.
Being interviewed with Vicky Petratus. So you're going to see Casey, the anonymous host of Case File, as well as True Crime Garage, True Crime Campfire, Paranormal Chicks, Dan and Lindsay from Scared to Death, and so many more awesome creators. And you, that's the most important part, sitting in a little circle, telling stories, hanging out, playing games, going on tours of the ship. Go to crimewaveandsea.com, use code SINISTER, and get one of those cabins, $99 down, and payment plans and all that good stuff, crimewaveandsea.com. You can follow us on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Follow us on YouTube and TikTok at Sinisterhood Podcast to watch clips from the episodes, live streams, and more. And if you're looking for a unique and personal gift for the Sinisterhood fan in your life, maybe you want to treat yourself to a pep talk. Book a cameo now, from happy birthday to birth announcements to congratulations on whatever awesome thing you've done. We would love to celebrate with you with a customized video. It can be immediately viewed and sent. It's a thoughtful gift. Makes you happy if you're doing a pep talk for yourself. And you also don't have to leave the house to do it. Go to the website cameo.com/sinisterhood and order yours now. Where can people find you on the internet?
I'm on Instagram and Threads at Christy M. Wallace and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
I'm on the internet at Heather versus the World.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Sinning.